Welcome to Inside Wealth. I'm your host, Stu Zimmerman, right here on Talk Radio 910 AM KNEW.
Well, we're back, and we're here with Eddie Erlandson, MD, a former 25-year vascular surgeon, hospital chief of staff, and has taken all the science and knowledge he has on our circulatory system and on how the brain functions into the business world as Senior Vice President of Worth Ethic, where he does consultation with major corporations, as well as working with his wife and writing with his wife, Kate Ludman, on the alpha male syndrome. So before we get to alpha male, let's just kind of wind up where we kind of left off with Eddie last segment, because you mentioned this focusing on what greater options do we have, which I know that so many of us are attracted to wealth because of the options it offers us. So with that being a connector, is there any suggestion that you can give us as a practice or something so that we can tap into more options than what our otherwise crocodile or reptilian brain would offer?
Well, there is, Stu, and let me give you this one that might really get your attention and some of our listeners as well. That is the latest research that shows that what's on your mind can change your brain. That is that what our mindset is, what we have in our thinking and hold in our thinking and actually change the structure of our brain. So you can imagine how impactful that might be. And let me give you an example. If you think about the mindset of abundance and wealth, and you believe and set the intention that you can actually create that, it is very likely that you are stimulating the very portion of your brain that creates the thinking that would allow you to successfully do that. Now, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And of course, you can take it to many other areas as well. So what's on our mind, what we are thinking, actually can change the thickness, the contour of certain areas of our brain, and obviously certain areas of the brain that have the best, most beneficial effect are the ones that we want to make the thickest and the biggest. So that's a fascinating stimulus for me to be sure that I'm paying attention to what attitudes I have, what mindsets I have, what intentions do I create almost on a minute-to-minute basis, and not letting kind of more negative mindsets impact your brain because they'll just shrink certain portions of it.
So, Eddie, if we really were to take this finding and drill down on it, because I know so many people out there think this whole idea of New Age thought and all of that, it's a lot of, you know, nice thoughts or airy-fairy, but it's ungrounded and it has no impact on the terra firma, on the science, on the harder realities in life. And what I hear you saying, or what I may be interpreting here as some of what's really possible for our species, is that if we were to individually and hopefully even collectively focus on greater care for each other, on service to each other, on our nature and observing the fact that this, frankly, this planet's our home, and take even more care in that regard, that we could actually cause, through our thoughts, our own physical evolution of the brain, or at least in the way it grows and changes.
Right, for the better or for the worse. So in other words, now that we have the technology of sophisticated imaging, like PET scanning and so on, and can do a very exquisite measurements of various areas of the brain, and can actually show what areas of our brain are actually lighting up because they're metabolizing and using oxygen when we're thinking certain things in certain ways, this is way outside any airy-fairy psychobabble or spiritualistic kind of view of things. I'm a born skeptic as a physician and a scientist, so this has certainly convinced me that you change your mind, change your brain, and vice versa.
That's fascinating. I'm just wondering when there's going to be one of these dating services that are going to have PET scans of everybody's brain. They'll just match you up based upon your brain imprint. Oh, you've been thinking about that? You've been thinking about that? Here you go. Move on. And that way you don't have to rely on as many surveys. But yet I digress. Let's talk for a moment about how this work integrates with some of our wiring, if you will, because so many of us, you wrote this great book called Alpha Male Syndrome, and there is a bit of wiring involved. Why don't you tell us what that is, and is it also just related to males?
Well, let's take it back just a little bit. I realized that a good percentage of the patients that I was operating on, male and female, were what we call the type A personality. This was work done by a couple of cardiologists now many years ago that demonstrated that these people that were called type A's had three characteristics. They were competitive, they were impatient, and they oftentimes were aggressive. Now, it turned out that these people who were type A's also were some of our most productive members of society. They were CEOs. They led companies. They accomplished great things. So this was a combination of behavior characteristics and probably brain functions that had an upside and had a downside. I probably met my first type A not in the operating room or in my office, but in the mirror, because vascular surgeons are well known to have some of these characteristics. But what we know about this combination of behaviors is that it seemed to have an increased risk of blockage of the arteries, or what's called atherosclerosis. It also increased the risk factors like hypertension or high blood pressure or elevation of your cholesterol, or what we call hyperlipidemia. So I got fascinated with how this impacted people's health, and could I help them change some of these behaviors, kind of turn the dial so that they had more of the positive aspects of and lessen their risk of having cardiovascular disease. So I started a program called Life Lessons, which was really a wellness and stress management program for type A's. And what I realized, succinctly stated, is that what caused sludge in blood vessels and what causes sludge in organizations that limited their productivity, their revenue growth, their happiness of employees, was actually the same problem. That this idea of the flip side of results-focused and of urgency and of push and tenacity could cause disease in your blood vessels, and it could also cause limited productivity in the organizations. And we knew that it came in several different flavors. So the overall alpha was something that we were exploring. We know the overall alpha has these three characteristics of competitiveness, impatience, and aggressiveness. But then there are four flavors of alphas. There's the alpha commander, the General MacArthur, the guy riding in on the white horse, loves to have people behind him, very charismatic. Downside, demands loyalty. If you aren't with him, you're against him. Then there's the alpha visionary. Got more new ideas in 1 hour than I have in a year, and all of them are the best, and all of them should be implemented immediately. So if he's leading an organization, he spins them with new ideas. He's got people out chasing ideas that haven't even been fleshed out enough to be executable, but he's full of lots of great ideas. Then there's the alpha strategist, smart as a whip, very analytic, connects the dots very, very quickly, thinks faster than most people, and the problem is that he probably is the smartest person in the room, and he wants everybody to know it. And then lastly, the alpha executor. This is the guy who either has or was born with, in his mind, a clipboard which says, have you done that yet? Have you done that yet? He basically, he or she sees the 50 to 150 steps that need to be done, and they want it done last, you know, a minute ago, and they keep hounding their people. So they drive projects relentlessly, but they also burn out their people, and it caused lots of despair and resentment. So this has really been a study of how the upsides can turn into the downsides, but also how can we help people who are alphas modify the downsides of their alphaness to make them even more effective. And even more importantly, how can we help people who work with alphas be even more effective in working with them? So this has been a piece of research that Kate and I have done, and we have found particularly applicable in our day-to-day coaching of executives in a wide variety of companies and corporations. But it's also applicable to how we all live our lives, whether it be in relationships or with our kids and so on.
We're here with Eddie Erlandson, MD, who has taken some incredible body of work in terms of how the brain operates, as well as how we can move through this syndrome of being the alpha male. And clearly, as you mentioned, it has a lot of upside to it in terms of productivity and getting things done and accomplishment. And it also has a lot of downside, including possibly being one of your patients there on the operating table, let alone.
Well, and don't forget, Stu, let alone the alpha males come in all different forms. Some of them are male and some of them are female.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So it's not just for us guys. Everybody can play this game.
Yeah, I don't think, we think alpha females maybe come in a little different flavors. But in general, this isn't exclusively a male gift or a male curse. It really covers both genders pretty well.
And Eddie, does this have, doesn't this show up throughout the entire organization? It's not just for leaders?
Well, we know that in the Western world, in the corporations that we have looked in and studied, about 70% of executives above the manager level would be defined as alphas. In other words, they have this characteristic of being quite competitive. It's a win-lose game for them, very urgent and impatient, always driving people to results, often with the stick rather than the carrot. So it is a characteristic of probably Western corporations, maybe a little bit more than Asian or global corporations in general. So if you aren't one, you're probably working for one.
So what you're saying is part of this alpha syndrome is cultural? To the Western culture?
Well, I think probably all cultures have their equivalent of the alpha. They probably just look different.
Okay.
The United States probably equates the alpha much more to the commander style. And I think the more Eastern cultures that we've worked with, there's much more of the strategist and style. But all in all, they have combinations of the same ones. They're just probably in different proportions.
So how do you work with people to take the best of what alpha has to offer, and how do you work with some of the shadow side of that?
Well, here's how we work with them. First of all, nobody makes any changes unless they have data that's compelling. So we actually spend a fair amount of time interviewing, gathering feedback confidentially and anonymously from the people who work around a certain person. What do they do well? What doesn't work so well? What behavior actually has positive impact? What has negative impact? And we then collect a ton of data on what makes them effective and what could make them even more effective if they changed. With that data in hand, we sit down usually in a 4-hour session, and we say, well, here's the data. What are you committed to changing in order to be more effective? Not what are you willing to change in order to be a nicer person or a better person. This is all pretty much couched in the framework of business or personal effectiveness. And then once we get those commitments, we basically get them to use the ultimate in influence strategy, disclosure and transparency. We get them to go to their peers, go to their direct reports, go to their managers and say, here's what I do well, here's what I don't particularly do well, but I'm committed to changing. And then we'll work with them on the strategies or the skills to do that, whether they be communication skills, problem-solving skills, project management skills. The skill set is a really easy one. The hard part is the commitment.
And is that simply a matter of, frankly, of ego and checking the ego and say, I'm really open to learning a few more tricks here?
Yeah, sometimes it is. But you see, what you can do is you can turn our own egos in a positive way. In other words, I might say, hey, you're really great at this. I wonder what it would look like if you were equally great at this one. So you actually engage their competitiveness and their results focus to help them commit to changing things that they have just become bad habits.
That's a fantastic approach. It really is. It's no wonder that you are as successful as you are, Eddie. I've got one final question for you, and then we'll let you go. Our time together has been all too brief. But here it goes. What is your vision for what our world could be?
Yeah. Well, My vision of what our world could be would be a world which had ultimate curiosity and was free of judgment. Mm. So, you know, living in a relationship with my wife and partner that is free of blame, criticism, and complaining, and is also totally curious to what can I learn from you today, is a utopia that I live in, that I sort of see as a vision for the world. Could we get ourselves physiologically, could we adjust our brain anatomy to live in that state of mind?
Eddie, I'm with you, buddy. Sounds like a great place to be. Thank you so much for showing up today.
You're very welcome, Stu. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW 910 AM San Francisco.